Hello, friends. How are you doing? I don't mind sharing with you, friends. I am in bits after what was, quite frankly, a crazy, mother-loving, wild fupper of a weekend. Just mental what we saw over this weekend. Two wins for Town. I was ringside for, I think, the best fight I've ever seen live. And I've seen a lot of fights, boy. Fabio Wardley at the O2. And then, of course, we had this crazy finish last night. I am Mark Heath. I'm joined by the young guns today. Old Watson. It was too much for him last night. He's had to go for a lie down. He's an old man now. He can't take it. But he wrote in his piece this morning that that was the most raucous he's ever seen Portman Road. Now, that's someone who's covered Ipswich Town for 13 seasons, friends. He's been there for the Derby games, been there for some big moments. But he says last night was the most raucous it's ever been. I saw a fan dislocate his shoulder celebrating. Connor Chaplin went streaking down the pitch like he'd just realised he'd forgotten to put his bins out. It was crazy, absolutely crazy. I'm not even going to bother introducing my friends today because I just want to get straight into it. Ipswich Town did it again. They came back from 2-1 down to beat promotion rival Southampton. And now it feels like, and then there were three in the race for the top two, the automatic spots. Alex Jones, what was it like for you?
Pretty crazy. Yeah. I think the post-match video that we did pretty much summed it up in the way that this happens sometimes with me. It rarely, very, very rarely happens with Stu, but with both of us, we kind of got to a point where we were trying to make points and talk, and then we just stopped because we didn't really know what to say. Just in that kind of moment. And it's weird because you look back at some of the other games and we were going through and listing the times this has happened. It's not the first time, folks, in terms of late comebacks, in terms of coming from 3-1 down, winning 4-3. No, it's not 4-3. Yeah, but we've had that before. Wow, this is already a good start, guys. Coming from 2-1 down, winning 3-2, all those different things. We've seen the late goals. We've seen Portman Road erupt, all those different bits. Yet this was the one that stood out for a few reasons, just in terms of, as Stu mentioned in his takeaways, the atmosphere was unbelievable. I can't boast the same number of Derby games and things like that. But even before you could really feel the momentum swing, it felt like, wow, there's something special brewing here in terms of the noise that's coming out. In terms of what it means for the table, in terms of what it means to the promotion race, in terms of who it was against, in terms of what it meant to those players launching themselves across the pitch. It's one of those where it will probably take a little bit of time for it to properly sink in. I was, to be perfectly honest, lying awake at something ridiculous o'clock, having typed up the Sam Morsey stuff that's now out. So go have a look at that. Something crazy. I noticed that Stu was awake as well, because when I logged on to my Twitter, he was retweeting stuff. This was at about 2 in the morning, maybe.
You weren't just sending each other messages going, "You still awake?"
No, it wasn't just like that. Like, are you still lying down in a dark room trying to sleep? So I noticed he was still up at about like 2, half 2, and I was kind of lying there as well trying to sleep, thinking, Christ, I don't really know how I'm supposed to sleep after that. And I'd assume that most of the fan base is in a similar way. And I assume Ross is in a similar way as well.
Well, that's a segue. Ross, before we get to talking about the game and what happened, I just want to focus on the end, really, and the atmosphere and what happened when Sarmiento found the net. Clearly, you were pitch side. I don't know how close you were to that. But can you kind of put into words what that was like?
We've ran out of words to
good.
To be honest, which is not good for you guys as the written journalist part of the team. But man, oh man, just wow, just wow. This team is special, and I just every time we get to these sort of moments, we just think this is never going to get topped. This is never going to get topped. They keep topping it. But yeah, being pitch side, to sort of capture that and watch that scenes was just unbelievable. You know, from, we'll get onto the goal itself, but I just couldn't believe my eyes seeing that ball go into the net. And obviously,
which side were you? Whereabouts were you?
I was wrong side. So he celebrated the other side. So yeah. I was looking at another photographer and went, great, they've scored, but also like, bloody hell, they've gone the wrong way. But yeah, it is what it is. But unbelievable scenes. I will admit, I did stop for a second and just go, like, what is going on? Like, what is going on? This is just unbelievable. Like, I think we'll play a clip soon.
Mm.
McKenna time. The amount of times we've scored late goals and late winners. It's just incredible. But that, I goosebumps. Absolute goosebumps. And then obviously when the full-time whistle went, I just went, oh, I'm going to go outside in a minute and speak to loads of the Cowie army and they're going to be buzzing, boy. But yeah, what a night. Under
Rossi, can you compare it to anything that you've had in your Ipswich Town supporting life in terms of kind of things that you've seen before? Carl Fuller, for example, our columnist, messaged me last night and said, he was meant to be writing a column last night, said, I can't write it tonight. My head, I'm too, like, all over the place. I need to gather my thoughts. And he said, he's been going 46 seasons and he can't remember kind of as wild a scenes. So for you, Rossi, I know you're much younger, but you've seen some big moments at Portman Road. How does that compare?
Yeah, it's definitely up there. Obviously, it only works when it's a full stadium. Obviously, I watched Town, like many of our listeners, when we were, you know, very bad and wasn't many people in the stadium. But, you know, the Arsenal game, always, that's one I always go back to because, you know, that was, you know, when Priskin scored, that was unbelievable. But yeah, there's some other like late winners and other moments, obviously, you know, Paul Anderson's goal against Norwich and the derby and the East Anglia, you know, the playoffs. Yeah. But that just felt very different and just special. The team and the fans were all together, and just how important the win was as well. Because as the ones I mentioned, the Arsenal one was important in terms of the first leg. Obviously the Paul Anderson goal was important part of the playoffs, but this one just felt so different. And I just was just looking around and just so many happy faces and, you know, Connor Chaplin running, that was just mad. I didn't actually see that at the time until I thought that was a fan, but then I was like,
he just comes like,
just unbelievable.
Fantastic. I don't know if you probably have heard it, friends. My voice is going. excuse me. But Brenna Woolley's commentary as well, which I know is doing the rounds. I mean, that's perfect. And I think the reason that it last night felt so mad was because it just continues this ridiculous, against the odds, not meant to be possible fairy tale that we're on. Ipswich Town are top of the table with six games left to play. They really might do it. And games like that are how we've got to this point. And again, coming from behind, doing the impossible, 97th minute winner. Chance looked at one point where it like it'd gone, and then he gets up and stabs it in the net. Unbelievable. Let's hear from Kieran McKenna and then let's talk about it even more.
That's the noisiest I've heard it in this stadium for a long, long time. It was incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah, great moment. Great moment. I think everyone got a little bit lost in it. Subs, staff, everyone. My radar still probably thinks there's 30 seconds to go, so you have to get organised again. We've had it happen to us. We've done it to Rovermere a month ago, so you still have to see the last ball or two out. But a wonderful moment for everyone involved and one that I'm sure everyone will remember for a long time.
Well, Fergie time back in the day. We're going to call it McKenna time now, aren't we?
It's a good habit. It doesn't happen by chance. I think I've spoken about that before. Everyone knows that it doesn't happen by chance. And there's a lot of work that goes into it, but it's a great way to win a game. Yeah, he had a few slips, so he'd have been getting he'd probably been getting criticised about his footwork if he hadn't toe poked that in, because he had a few slips when he came on. But no, he's reacted really, really well and got a toe poke to it, and it's some big goals for him now. You know, that was one of the big things about the loan for him second half of the season, was to be more effective, to get in the box better, to find a way to add to his goal tally, and he stepped up with some big moments for us.
Okay, AJ, the voice of reason. Shall we start trying to break down and analyse this game in a bit more detail? Because clearly there's a lot of talking points. Where do you want to start? Kick us off. I guess Leif Davis's absolute belter would be a good place to start.
Yeah, trying to break down this game. Well, trying to see what I can actually remember of any of it. Because in fairness, up until stoppage time, it felt like quite a normal one, and then I think that goal just wiped everything out of my brain. I was writing everything up after. I was like, did that happen? I was saying to Stu, I was writing out different words. I was like, is that a word? Is that how I spell it? Is that, I've got an S in there? Is it one S or is it two S's? And he's kind of looking at me going, So,
can I just say, praise the Lord, by the way, that it wasn't an 8 p.m. kickoff last night? Because that had happened with our 10 p.m. deadline, there would have been serious meltdowns going on.
Yeah, considering that. So, with an 8 p.m. kickoff and we have 10 deadline, essentially, the deadline is about 10 minutes after the full time whistle, which is about how long it took for me to do the rewrite. A lot of people are very concerned about my rewrites at the moment, which feels quite nice, but I'd rather be rewriting about wins than having Cardiff situations, that's for sure. Breaking down the game, I thought Town started this one really well, which in a way came as a little bit of a surprise because I was a bit concerned that they were going to maybe feel their legs a little bit, because you could sense that was kind of coming into play in the Blackburn game. They felt a little bit tired at times, and you could tell that they, the term that Connor Chapman used after the game, they sagged deeper than they liked to. And I thought coming up against a Southampton team that have that depth, that made a couple of changes, there was that risk of potentially starting off in the same way. So really pleasantly surprised that they took the game. Southampton bit back quite well, in fairness to them, but Town land the first blow. It's an unbelievable ball, and this has to get more recognition because it kind of gets brushed away with Leif Davis' finish. But Sam Morsey's pass out, yes, he's got space, but it's just superb the way he clips it to the left. He spoke quite in depth about the space that Leif Davis had in this game, kind of analysing at depth why they were able to kind of pick him out at will, because Southampton were leaving huge gaps in those kind of wide areas that essentially made him just such a massive, massive threat. Comes out, lovely clip ball. Davis sets himself, you're thinking, cross into the box. Get another assist. No, Leif Davis isn't going to do that this time. Really thought at the time it hit the side netting, because it was just such a bizarre finish. It went near post, went top corner. Bazunu, I mean, given it's near post, might be a bit disappointed, but there's so much power on it. Like, it's such a ridiculous hit. And it just shows, again, what he's got in his locker. There's so much to him. People will point out the defensive side with the two goals that were conceded. I don't really see it that much, to be perfectly honest, but it's just part and parcel of how Town play. I don't think it's down to him. I think defensively he's really good, but you have that, you have his creative side, and then you have the fact that if he gets the ball in those kind of areas, he does that. A really complete, unbelievable player. And this is just another moment that totally proved that and totally raised the roof off Portman Road. The noise when that went in was quite something. A, because of what it meant to take the lead in a game like that, and B, because that has got to be up there as one of the best goals scored at Portman Road this season. That is a big catalogue of goals.
Ross, it's kind of gone under the radar, but Leif Davis got his 16th assist last night as well, which obviously we'll come on to in due course. But that's the record, isn't it? He's broken the record now for assists for a fullback. So that's happened, and it's kind of barely been mentioned. So just kind of demonstrates what a crazy night it was at Portman Road, Rossi. Clearly, Town took the lead, but then within a matter of minutes, they were 2-1 behind.
Yeah, that was a cracking goal. And Leif Davis is just, he's a Premier League player. Mm-hmm. I was going to say in the making, but he's a Premier League player now. He should be a Premier League player right now. Hopefully truly Ipswich Town. But that was just a great sort of moment. We thought, we've got a game on our hands here. We make it 1-0. And obviously, Leif Davis was hardly breathing at Blackburn. You know, McKenna came out and said he was struggling to breathe and illness in the camp. And I thought, okay, 1-0. And I knew there was going to be goals in this game. And I thought, okay, 1-0, happy days. And I think maybe Town could go on to score another one here. No. That was the quickest of turnarounds I've probably seen. I just remember, like, obviously us photographers, we're now trying to make sure we're sending photos and stuff, and we look up and went, oh bugger, I've equalised. Yeah. Like, oh, how did that come about? And obviously I have to quickly see what went on. But of course they made it 2-1. But Southampton, they're quality players, haven't they? They're a good team. They are a good team. Yeah. And I just felt in that first half especially, I felt we just looked leggy, really leggy. I'm sort of fast forwarding now, but at half time, what I normally do, sort of tradition, I go upstairs, get a hot chocolate, so many people came, sort of just were saying, oh, they're just a bit better, aren't they, in this first half? And, we need to, all be organised a bit more. But, although I'd never sort of thought we lost this, I just felt, okay, we've conceded two good goals, good slot of goals, fair play to Southampton, well worked goals. But it wasn't what we wanted to be 2-1 down half time.
We shouldn't have worried, though, of course. But fair play, you have to say, to AJ. The second goal, especially for Southampton, was a thing of beauty, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. The first one is just disappointing, to be really honest, just the way that they were able to get the ball into the box and poke home. There were some pretty heavy protests from Cameron Burgess. It looks fine to me, to be perfectly honest. The second one, I've not seen a team do that to Ipswich before, maybe aside from Leeds at push in terms of the way. And even then, Leeds probably didn't quite do it in the same way. It was almost a carbon copy of what we've seen Town do, in the sense it was just two passes and they were in. One pass over to Armstrong, Stuart Armstrong. Wow, that's confusing. Stuart Armstrong, Adam Armstrong. We had a lot of fun with that last night. Makes the run down, has quite a lot of space because Twanzebe has come up high. And then from there, it's just the ball to the other side. Davis kind of ends up getting behind Adam Armstrong. Oh, God, wow. And then it's a fairly easy finish from there. But it's just the way that they just carved through Town, which we've not really seen before. But that is the kind of quality that you're coming up against. And it's also the point where you have to say, fair enough, fair play. Because, yeah, these are multi-million pound players that have X number of Premier League appearances. But they're just a good team as well. And you could see that. And it was admitted after the game. Kieran McKenna said that. Sam Wardy was very quick to say, this is a really good team that we've come up against. And in that moment where they turned it around and kind of looking at the reaction, how a Town going to try and get back into this, to the last stages of the first half, was not great. And then, you know, again, Wardy in particular was quite quick to kind of jump on that. So it wasn't what we were supposed to be like. And then you get to half time and the feelings kind of, they're not out of it. And I've learnt my lesson from the Wolves game and saying that they're out of a game at kind of 2-0, 2-1 down, whatever it is. I think it was 2-0 in that one and 2-1 here. And it's always a risk saying that. And I never really felt like they were out of it. The fans had that as well. When they were walking back in and the players were going into the tunnel, it wasn't like half of them had gone to go get a beer. They were literally crowded around the tunnel, cheering them back in at 2-1 down. Shows where the club's at, for starters. But it also did feel like it could have been one of those games based on the latter stages where they'd just come up against a side that was better, was fresher, had more depth, and potentially was just going to end up being a step too far. Obviously not how it ended up panning out after that.
We've got a clip from McKenna talking about halftime in a minute, Rossi. Before we get to that, though, obviously there was a fairly significant moment before halftime when Big Chief Keith went down injured. Clearly a man that has been extremely busy in terms of playing football and the type of player he is. He's a very physical player. Goes down with a back injury, which clearly that was a blow. And it will be a blow. We're hoping he's fit to play Norwich this weekend. But seeing that, it did feel like a significant moment, didn't it?
Yeah, big moment. Although I did think it was one of those tactical things from McKenna. I thought, at first. But I was like, no, he's holding his back. He doesn't look good. Got a bit of a sore one there, Kiefer. I'm sure we'll find out a bit more. I think it was asked in the presser and, yeah, we'll find out later in the week and hopefully he is back because we need him for this run in this final six games. But, yeah, big moment because he's the leading man up front there. Of course, Ali Alhamady, he came on and, of course, made an impact as well. But we've got to remember, start of this year, he was a League Two footballer. And obviously, he's made a step up. He scored four goals. He's a cult hero already, Ali Alhamady. Like, fans love him already. And there was just one moment, once fast forward to the second half, but there was one moment where he just, like, I think it must have been maybe 2-2, but he was like to the North Stand, like, come on, and trying to, you know, bring the atmosphere up even more. But yeah, to lose Kiefer Moore was a big hit because we're 2-1 down. He's our leader man against a promotion rival. You think, oh, dearie me, but we didn't have to worry, did we, boys? Because the super subs once again helped us out. And yeah, we got there.
They will indeed. Just before we get to this clip of McKenna about halftime, AJ, your thoughts on Alhamady and what Town lose when Moore's out of the side as he was?
Yeah, I think it's a blow. A couple of ways of looking at this. I think Ali came on and did well. There's a moment at 2-1 down. If we fast forward a little bit, he hits the post. Nice work from Nathan Broadhead, plays him in. Another day that ends up in the back of the net. Talk about lucky old Ipswich Town, but that's easily 2-2. So there's that kind of things. There are a few moments where I thought he could have done a little bit better. There's one where he gets played through and Towner in a 3-on-2 situation. He's got a player to his left and a player to his right. and he runs straight at two defenders, shoots, and that's it. And it's those kind of moments that frustrate me a little bit. On the flip side, I sometimes think it works better having him there. I think actually in this game, it worked better having Ali Alhamady here and Kiefer Moore. And I think that part of that is because a lot of teams will go in with very, very specific game plans of how to deal with Kiefer Moore. They know what the threat is. They've seen this guy play championship football for years now. They know that he's a very unique player, a very tall, physical player. So, for example, in this game, they had Bednarek quite near to him. They kind of tried to isolate him a lot, stop the crosses into the box. And it felt like sometimes in some games, you can see him getting cut off a little bit. And when you then throw in a little bit of a wild card situation by bringing on Ali Alhamady, totally different player, that game plan then needs to change. And sometimes teams don't really know how to deal with that. I think Southampton were potentially in that bracket here, where when that change was made, it just allowed Town's build up to change a little bit. Alhamady likes to get in the little pockets a little bit more. He's a little bit kind of slicker in a way, a little bit more nifty. And I think that that ended up really playing into Town's hands at some point. So obviously you don't want Kiefer Moore out at any point. Really hope that he's back for Saturday's fairly large football game in Norfolk. But I think that there are always kind of these advantages, at least in some games, where you have that change and you can have something that the opposition maybe aren't just as prepared to come up against.
I think that's how Sky are selling the derby actually on Saturday. Fairly large football game in Norfolk. Watch it on Sky. Right. So Town with 2-1 down. Half time. Let's hear from McKenna about half time.
Yeah, we were pretty calm at half time. I thought the first half was a good game. We worked the first goal well. Both teams were giving each other problems, to be fair. We were giving them problems, you know, right through the game, especially with Leaf on the left-hand side and switches out to that side. And they were giving us problems down our right-hand side and overloading us, you know, really well down that side. So both teams were giving each other problems. They executed fantastically well on their two goals, I have to say. We had a blow in the first half with Kiefer coming off, and that, you know, probably gave them the momentum for 10 minutes or so before half time. But I think the feeling in the dressing room was, you know, there wasn't too much wrong with the performance. We just needed to regroup. There were some details that we needed to adjust with our setup and how they set up against us, and some details that we needed to help Ali with coming on off the bench in a game like that. But we knew we were, you know, in for a really good second half, and there was still, you know, still going to be spells, and there was still spells where Southampton would be in the ascendancy, where we'd have to defend our goal, we'd have to block shots, make saves, because they're too good of a team for not to have those spells. But we also knew that we would have a threat, and we would still be capable of scoring goals. Subs would be able to make an impact, and as it does, our fitness would carry through to the last minute. So yeah, I think the half time was relaxed, focused, and we knew we were still right in the game.
All right then, Ross, here, this mental fairy tale that we're all on, which is still going. There's been recurring themes. One, we've already spoken about, Town are never beaten. They come from behind, they win games. Two, subs change games. That happened again. Three, subs score goals. Four, Town score late goals, big late goals. Seen all of that in this game. Subs, should we start there? Subs come on, and they end up being, again, we shouldn't be surprised because we've seen it so many times, but again, that's a key move from McKenna, which changes the game.
Yeah. And that, once again, I think the players know, we've said this before, the finishers, you know, being a substitute is not like a punishment. It's not like, oh, God, I'm on the bench again. Because, yeah, they're guaranteed to come on. And they were, you know, changes that were needed. I remember just looking over and went, yeah, McKenna's doing a lot of changes here. It's not just one, there's a few. And yeah, they're big moments. And, you know, those subs, is it triple change in the 64th minute or something like that?
Oh, no, 61st, I think.
Okay, something like that, yeah. Harry Clark, Jack Taylor, Nathan Broadhead, replacing, remind me, I think Twanzebe,
Luongo, and Caden Jackson.
So three very different changes, really, if you think about it. You know, definitely Axel Twanzebe. I know, actually, Harry Clark replaced him, so it's not a different one. But yeah, Nathan Broadhead, obviously, is the man of the moment. He's always up for big games, and obviously he's the man who got the equaliser But I'm trying to think the stat now. But there's, I think
25.
I just got 25. There we go. That is mental. Also now proves McKenna is a man who's got a magic wand, and he finds a way to make these perfect substitutions. And 25 goals from subs, that must be a record as well in the championship.
Talking about magic, Sarmiento's magic, you know.
Oh, he is. Yeah.
So 25. I was listening to you, Ross, but I was finding the stats. So 25 goals scored by subs, and the other one, obviously, which is relevant to this game, is the goals from losing positions, which late goals. So 31 out of 96 goals have come in the 75th minute or beyond. 17 of those 31 have secured either a draw or a win. AJ. I feel like we're saying a lot of the same things we've said, but I mean, all these recurring themes were crystallized and we saw in this game.
Yeah, I think it's important as well when you look at the goals from subs that it's important also to look at what the other subs did as well here. Jack Taylor, for me, changed the game massively. Love Massimo Luongo. Think he was running on empty a little bit. Bring on someone who's energetic, who wants to prove a point, potentially wants to have prove a point ahead of a derby game that he'd like to start in. Who knows? But he came on, added so much energy. And I said it in the reaction video last night, but the pass that he played to Nathan Broadhead to set up the equaliser was so good, because I feel like when the ball comes to you, you're on the edge of the area, you've got a split second to make a decision. There must be millions of things going through your head. Do I bend it top bins like I've done before, try and make myself a hero? Do I play it around the edge of the box? Do I play it back to where it came from? Yeah, in that split second, he plays a perfectly weighted pass to Nathan Broadhead. It's a brilliant finish. But just as a move again, and these are not goals that just come from one key action. Like we talk about the Sarmiento, for example, that it's a unbelievable moment. It's that shot, the scuff and the shot that we'll all remember, but the build-up to it's unbelievable. And this is absolutely the case in terms of the equaliser as well, the way that they play it out. Leif Davis again getting involved, the ball in, the quick pass from Jack Taylor. It's those fresh legs, and there's a lot that gets said about XYZ teams of really these kind of big three former Prem clubs that have huge money on the bench, Leeds with whoever, Ruter and Nontos, who's kind of coming on late, and Southampton bringing on all sorts off the bench in this game. But when you're able to bring on a player who was playing in League One last year, let's not forget, and he plays such an instrumental part for a team that is now on 87 points in a game against a team that was playing Premier League football last season, and he puts in a performance like that, it's just truly remarkable. Like, there should be a huge gap here. There should be. It should be that one team can bring on these players and just blows the other one away. Yet Town are bringing on players that on paper have come from lower divisions, have come from different backgrounds that would make them less suitable for these kind of situations. Yet they're coming on and not just matching the opposition, but actually doing better. And Jack Taylor's one who definitely deserves a lot of praise here, but everyone who's come on, put in that kind of shift, all of the subs deserve a huge amount of praise, whether they scored goals or not.
Yeah, it's that kind of it shouldn't be possible feeling, which has been another recurring theme about this season, hasn't it? I keep expecting to be like, right, at some point it's going to fall away. I've been kind of not wanting to think about that, but kind of expecting it all season. And now here we are with six games left. It's crazy, isn't it? Rossi, talk to me then about the winner. We've already said, obviously, the scenes it provoked, and dislocated shoulders and all sorts, and Brennan Woolley going crazy on the comms, Conor Chaplin sprinting across the pitch. Leif Davis sets it up. Sarmiento, who seems to be a killer off the bench, maybe not kind of a showpiece starter, but when he comes off the bench, he's got this knack for making things happen. And this could go down as perhaps the biggest goal of Ipswich Town's season.
Yeah, big moment. And as we mentioned already, he's magic, And I think when he originally signed, I think we were, excited, but also I think, do we actually need him? And well, he's really had a few, big moments already in a Town shirt. And I'm sure West Brom fans are thinking, bloody hell, you know, why couldn't he have done that for us? But he's, yeah, once again, if you watch the goal back and think, how has he even scored that, really? Because he sort of slips and sort of tackle, whatever it was. And then he just toe punts it, and Mizuno in goal had no chance. But for me, there was one moment I was like, when you watch it back, it's like it stops for a second. If you know what I mean, it just, I don't know, it doesn't like burst the net, does it? It's sort of just
it's
sort
really
of slow motion.
The actual shot itself is kind of, as you say, it feels, I don't know, but certainly watching it, it felt like it was in slow motion.
Yeah. Yeah, so that just felt weird, but yeah, just when it did go in, it was just what a moment. And I think he must be thinking that is a big moment in my career, but also in this town season. Yeah. And you probably don't know what to do. What do you celebrate? And obviously, all town players, they just do the knee slide, don't they? And that's what he did, of course. But when that went, and obviously, we've already spoken about the atmosphere, but dearie me, I'm sure people like who live around the corner, they probably heard that. And yeah, just unbelievable scenes, and yeah, big moment players. This team, as we've, you know, said so many times, this is just a special team running towards adversity, of course, is the motto. And they did that because they never stop. And what a goal.
Are there any more recurring themes we've missed before we finish talking about this game? I think we've got them all in. Do you want to have your a few words about Sarmiento as well, AJ? As I say, he has started, but he tends to be, as they say in baseball, a closer. You bring in your big gun to close the match or the baseball game, to pitch out the game and preserve the win, or in this case, get the win.
Yeah, Ross's point was interesting there, because I was thinking back to when he first signed, and absolutely my first thought when he came in was a nice signing, but I don't know where he fits in, to be perfectly honest. And I think it's when you put together your depth chart and you say, well, he'll compete in this position, but do they need competition in this position? Because the player they've got here is really, really good. And it's taken me probably quite a while to realise it's not about having this player to compete with this player. It's about having one to start the game and one to finish it. And it has been the idea behind everything that Town have done so far this season. With it being Jeremy Sarmiento, again, Sam Morsy, I loved his reaction to this. I asked him, can you talk me through what it was like, the winning goal for you? And he just went, Jeremy Sarmiento is, and he stopped and he went, how do I say it? Quite chaotic. And he went, in a good way, which I thought summed it up absolutely perfectly. He's just absolute madness, isn't he, in terms of what he can bring off the bench, in terms of the tackles. We saw it from the start. We saw it in the Sunderland game, the aggression he brings, so many different parts to his game that suit being the finisher, that suit being the player to end the game. And one thing that I want to point out, I don't know if you guys have the same thing here, alternative angles. Do you love these as much as I do? Because having the normal shot, fair enough. Having the TV angle, but seeing it from behind the goal, seeing fans in the away end filming it, seeing, especially we had this with the Davis goal as well, but particularly with the winner, shots that are focused on the fans behind. I just opened up Twitter a few minutes ago and there were about five that came onto my timeline. That's the kind of thing that was keeping me awake at about 2 a.m. scrolling through, looking at them, thinking, oh my God, wow, that's unbelievable. This just what you love, having those kind of things to look back on, those memories. No one in that stadium will forget that moment.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you there. I love pictures of, let's say, so you can see the fans and you can see the moment happening. And obviously, the ball's yet to hit the net, but you can literally just pick out a fan and see what their reaction is. There's a famous picture of Michael Jordan hitting his last shot to win the sixth championship with the Chicago Bulls in Utah. And all the Utah fans, the ball's in the air, but they already know he's made it because it's Michael Jordan. So they've already got their head in their hands like that. It's amazing. You mentioned Sam Morsy. So let's hear from Sam, shall we?
Sam, I've heard some fans say it's one of the craziest endings to a game they've seen at the road. I feel like there's been quite a few of those so far this season.
Yeah, I think this one was a little bit special. Last minute winner. Now, it was brilliant, to be fair. First half, they were really good. Credit to them. Then second half, I think we looked better. We looked stronger. We looked better on the ball. And it was really good. It was really good. And then the team spirit, the character, it shone through, and we got what we deserved in the end.
Yeah.
talk me through the late winner then from your position, both in terms of the goal and the noise, the celebrations afterwards, because there was so much going on in that moment.
Yeah, it was brilliant. So there was about a minute left. We played a few balls around the back. Clarkie's passed it to me, and then I saw Leaf again. You know, they've overloaded one side, but they kept Leaf's side quite light, and with Leaf's quality, you can't do that. So I've managed to find him. He cut it back, Jeremy. Jezzy's very, how can I put it? He's quite chaotic in a good way. Everything's either like he's chopping someone, or it's a tackle, or he's lunging in. So I think he's tackled, and then he just got back up and just sort of poked it in. And yeah, I mean, it was just disbelief. It was like, wow, what a win. So it was nice, it was a great moment. You know, you looked at the clock and it was 97 and 98, and yeah, it was a special moment. And we're going to need more of those. But yeah, we'll enjoy the win tonight for sure.
And Morsey's reaction, I think, was that wasn't it? He sort of went as if like, this is crazy, what's going on? Which, you know, is the sort of feeling that we all have, I think, and have had for most of the season. Anything else to mention from the game before we move on to post-game? Because I want to talk about salty Russell Martin as well. Obviously, there was a red card, which you haven't mentioned, AJ. Anything else to mention?
This happened yesterday as well, where we went straight on to the goal. And then Stu went, you've forgotten the red card as well here. This is Leif Davis all over for me again. It's the ball that gets played over. I think it might be Morsey's pass. I can't remember totally off the top of my head, but plays him kind of clean through. It's denial of the goal scoring opportunity, which is why it's a red. I've heard some Southampton fans a little bit frustrated, to put it in one way, a little bit frustrated that it was given because it was quite far to the left, and given the fact that there were quite a few players almost kind of on level with him. So I understand that, but you can also see why it's been given. Totally changed the whole setup during stoppage time. And it was a little bit weird to see Russell Martin's approach actually in stoppage time. I didn't think it was the right way of doing it. It didn't really feel like they changed too much about their system, and it just allowed Town to be the dominant team in those final stages and create the chances. Yeah, anything else to add from there? I think the other thing to mention as well, and this was touched on last night, press box etiquette. How the hell are you supposed to do that? I am guilty in some moments of probably going a little bit overboard, but in moments like that, that was just one of those where how do you like try and control how you're feeling when the game was supposed to be dead? Again, I feel like I'm saying the same things, but there was a free kick right towards the end, and it gets blasted straight at Bazunu, and you're thinking, oh, that's it. Now we've finished everything, written it up, photos done. And then for them to come and score that, I think it might have been something along the lines of 96-55. It was literally within about 5 seconds to go. One of those where, obviously, I can't control myself. I think Stu had a moment as well where he lost all his composure. Just for a second, a bit like McKenna. Not all of his composure, but there was kind of like a stand-up shout and kind of like, maybe not quite the weird scream that I just did there, but it was really quite something. It was similar to McKenna in the way that you see him celebrating like mad, and then he does this. Have you ever seen the Ralph Hasenhüttl one where he starts celebrating and then he goes like that, tries to calm it? That was very, very similar to that, when McKenna, I think, just lost his mind for a split second and then was like, oh, wait, we still have to win this game and see it out for the next kind of 15 seconds or whatever it was. So, that's I think that Ipswich Town have definitely tested people's press box etiquette over the last few weeks in particular, and this one probably broke a few of us watching it from the press box. Yeah,
I breached press box etiquette at the O2 on Sunday night, which I'll come on to when we talk about that in due course. I suppose the other thing to reflect on, we heard from Sam Morsey there as well, in terms of potential negatives from the game, more obviously injury a talking point, but also now Morsey is, what is it, AJ, two yellow cards away, I think?
Yellow cards from a three-match ban. Three, obviously, is quite a killer figure here, and it was a difficult game for him in a lot of ways. I thought he struggled with the first half quite a lot. It just felt one where Southampton knew to wind him up. They knew that that was going to be the best way of trying to nullify his threat, calm them down after the break, but it means that with now six games to go, he has to avoid getting those two yellow cards. If Town would drop into the playoffs and he, say, picked up a 15th on the final day, he would miss all three potential playoff games, for example. Those playoff games will count in terms of a ban. It does mean if he picked up a card in the playoffs, it wouldn't count towards it. So the cutoff point is the final day of the regular season, okay, but they can run into the playoffs. So it is just six games to navigate. He has done it before. He likes a yellow card tightrope. This is the third time in two seasons he's had one of them. But with a Norwich game coming up, with other big games and teams that will probably try and target him, it's going to be tricky for sure.
We know he's good at it, though. We've seen him
do
it.
We do know he's good at it, yeah.
We've seen him do it. Right, then, let's just hear from Kieran McKenna one last time, and then I want to talk about Russell Salty Martin.
I am. Players and staff, I have to say, it's took an incredible effort. Yeah, that's, of course, football, Easter weekend, but, you know, it was a tough game away to Blackburn off the back of international duty, late back Friday night. Southampton are a really, really difficult team to prepare for, I have to say, probably one of the most thorough preparations we've had to go through, and then they still can give you different problems in different ways. So it's took a big effort over everyone over the weekend, staff wise, to prepare the players physically and tactically as well as we could, and for the players to, you know, keep the energy, keep the focus, keep the spirit, and get ready to go again. So yeah, I have to say it's really, really proud of the effort was put into that one.
That was McKenna post-game then. And in what Stuart Watson described as a terse post-match press conference, Southampton boss Russell Martin, this has attracted quite a lot of comment, unsurprisingly. Rossi, he said, "We were the best team. We didn't deserve to lose. We came here. We had 17 shots on goal, created five huge chances. We missed three. They had relatively little until late on." Probably didn't say it like that. At 2-1, we responded amazingly well to a poor goal to concede. If you're at the game, if you were feeling it and watching it, you know we were the dominant team and we should go on to win the game. Your thoughts on that, Rossi? Does he have a point?
They were the better team, to be honest, overall. And Southampton probably one of the best teams we've seen at Portman Road. We've had, you know, obviously Leeds, when they came to us back in August, they were pretty good, weren't they? And there's been some other good teams as well. But, yeah, I wouldn't say they dominated us. Maybe in periods, but in that final sort of 10 minutes, we had the momentum, obviously, because of the goal and the fans, you know, backing the players. Obviously, Russell Martin's got that connection to them up the road, and I don't think he's actually ever lost against Town as a player when he played for them. So yeah, I'm sure he will be a bit salty, and I think there is an image of him actually look like he's crying. But yeah, managers are going to be like that, aren't they? They're gonna say that when they've lost late on. I think any manager, any team to concede so late on when you're 2-1 up, especially as well, and obviously with his connection. But I think someone said that someone was drinking Russell Martin's tears.
A classic. The Eddie Hearn, isn't it? Drinking the Peroni, drinking the Martin's tears. Clearly his dander was up, AJ, and I guess that the extra frustration, given that his side played pretty well, the defeat feels like it's kind of pushed them out of the top two race. I know nothing's ever certain, but it does feel like that now. It's like a three-horse race.
Yeah, it does. I think that I wouldn't necessarily go as far as saying they were the better team when you look over the course of the 90 minutes. I thought that they were absolutely the better team in the first half, but second half, their threat was nowhere near as good. And to be perfectly honest, when you look at the stats, again, I'm going to go on about stats, I'm sorry, but they do back up a point of what you see. And when you look at it statistically, Town probably did have the better chances after the break. So I think that balanced it out. Was it maybe a game that deserved a winner? On the balance of play, possibly not. Was it a match that deserved a winner just in terms of the occasion and what it meant? Absolutely. It needed that kind of fairy tale ending at least to go one way or the other from purely neutral perspective, and obviously from Town's perspective to go their way. And it does do a lot for the promotion race now. It does feel like it's going to be two from three with Southampton now. So there are 74 points. Next up ahead of them is Leicester on 85. So that's 11 points. They have a game in hand on Leicester, which even if they won. I think the game in hand, they'll have two, won't they? Because they've also got to play Leicester. This is where the maths gets really confusing. Mm. And to be honest, after last night and the fact that it's before midday, my brain isn't capable of doing it. So we'll just try our best here. But it's still a big gap to make up. They've then got a couple of games in hand on Leeds and on Town. They've obviously still got to go to Elland Road as well. So in terms of catching the other two, it maybe actually feels more likely because they're able to claw back those points against them in terms of playing them in the next few weeks. But it just feels like a lot to do. And even then, if probably require them pretty much winning every single game between now and the end of the season to do it. Mm. Every single one of the eight, there's some hard games in there. They've still got to play Coventry. They've still got to host Preston in that game that's called off because of the fire. They've still got to, they finished the season with Leicester away, Stoke at home. They could need a result to stay up, and then they have to go to Leeds on the final day. It does now feel like it has filtered down into three, and the fact that Ipswich are there, not just there, but at the moment are top of that pile is remarkable. The fact that they've managed to kind of deliver the knockout blow to a team that has that sort of quality, has been in the Premier League recently, etc., etc., is remarkable. The fact that they are on 87 points from 40 games with six to go is still something that I don't really think I've got my head around.
Mm. I think I'm right in saying that Leicester's game in hand is against Southampton, isn't it? It's that midweek game towards the end of April. Who was it who said at the start of the season Ipswich Town would be top of the table at some point? Oh, that was me, wasn't it? Fantastic. That's worked out rather well, hasn't it? Do you know who missed the winner last night? Ed Sheeran. Left early, didn't he? Poor form, Ed. There was also an old face in the crowd, the ghost of Christmas past yesterday, which Rossi captured. Here he is, look. There is big Mick McCarthy. Now, he doesn't look like he's enjoying things there, does he? Bit of a pout on his face. And we had a little bit of fun on the podcast account suggesting that he wanted to see him lumping it up top to top pros and proper blokes, which has upset a couple of people.
Are you going to do the impression? What would he have said? What was going through his head?
I can't do it. It's Watson's impression.
Ross, can you do it?
Sadly not. No.
Disappointing. Right. We'll have to get him to do it on the next pod.
Absolutely. So yeah, clearly Mick did actually enjoy it. It was just a bit of fun. He celebrated the winner. Of course he did. And it was good to see him back. Friends, just a bit of fun. Nothing to get too excited about. Right then, we should also mention, of course, since we last spoke, and this is a mental weekend, clearly Southampton is the game to talk about, but they also played on Friday, Ross, at Blackburn. They won. I'm going to sum it up like this. First half, good-ish. Second half, turgid. Result, 3 points, move on. Anything else to mention?
Good Friday.
AJ, when I said earlier, just before we started rolling, they played pretty well in the first half. You went for half of the first half.
Yes, I'm very pedantic here. Yeah, kind of slogged their way through the second half of the first half. No point dwelling on this one too much, but goal was lovely. This was the one that broke the assist record for Leif Davis. Chaplin's outside the boot pass to him, then played back. Lovely finish. Goalkeeper should be embarrassed because that was horrendous from him. Blackburn then go and score three times and they're all disallowed. So that's kind of funny. Hat-trick of disallowed goals for a variety of reasons. The second one was the most confusing because it's kind of like is it an offside? What has the linesman seen? Is he impeding the goalkeeper's vision? What's going on? A very strange one. That there was something, obviously, but I mean, again, you can kind of argue on a few of them, including the one that where the ball gets knocked out of Vaz's hands because he got both on it, etc., etc. At the end of the day, Ipswich Town are just lucky. That's the only reason why they won that, isn't it? That's it. It's just this. We've seen it going around a lot, haven't we, in terms of the social media stuff. There've been some new ones recently. We've seen the EFL have scripted it so Ipswich can win. Promotion was a good one.
Oh, I've seen the Taylor Swift night. NFL theory. Yeah.
Yeah, we've seen that one. So technically, Ipswich are the Chiefs now. So that's good.
Is it cheer and Taylor Swift way. In that scenario? Could be.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully, who knows, maybe it is that situation. We've seen Voodoo Curses was one thrown out by a Leeds fan on Twitter a few days ago. I think that was after the Blackburn game. One that I think, funnily enough, my mum pointed out to me, what she saw on Twitter, was a Leeds fan described Ipswich as the turd that they can't flush away.
Oh, lovely.
Which, yeah, nice one. But we've had a few different ones. We've had a lot of them have been about the narrative now, or the EFL are just, they've sent off James Bree, so they can have another late winner for Ipswich, and it can be the fairy tale narrative, et cetera, et cetera. It's all just luck. It's all scripted. It's literally just a massive play, isn't it?
Mm. I enjoy the fact that even Mrs. Jones is now coming up and sharing tweets regarding Ipswich Town.
She was messaging me last night about the Leeds result and all sorts. And
was she?
Yeah, I was about to drive back. She's fully engrossed in this promotion race.
I like it.
It's hard not to be engrossed in this promotion race, so fair enough.
Did you see, when we talk about the promotion race before we move on to Fabio Wardley, did you see the entertaining scenes in the Leeds game last night with the penalty and Joel Peru putting the ball down? I don't know if this is genuine or whether it's one of these kind of reverse ferrets that some teams are doing now. Peru puts the ball down. It's 1-1 against Hull to take the penalty. And then Somerville comes up and says, no, I'm going to take it. And it looks like there's a genuine kind of disagreement between them. And Somerville's like tapping his chest like this. Obviously, Somerville then goes and scores. And then the third goal as well. Have you seen this, AJ?
I haven't. Sure you have. I haven't actually seen any. I was driving back. I haven't. That's embarrassing. Yeah. I was driving back when this game was on. The thing is with Leeds is that I know that with their penalties, because they're not lucky, so they only have a lot of penalties. when they had them, a lot of the time, we've seen Patrick Bamford take them. And spoiler alert, Patrick Bamford's not very good at taking penalties. You might remember one at Stoke where he launched it into the stands, into the away fans behind, and the away fans took the ball back on the bus with them from Patrick Bamford's missed penalty. So they had one a few weeks ago where he picked up the ball, was going to take it, and then he had it taken off him. It's essentially, I think it's more than anything, it's to make sure that the opposition can't get to the penalty taker and try and wind them up. I thought we were going to see that actually with the Al-Hamadi one that he took against Bristol City, although he actually then ended up taking the penalty. So who knows, fair enough. But I think that's probably where it comes from, but maybe there's a rift in the camp. Who knows? Maybe
go back and watch it. Go back and watch it. If it is just a ruse, pretty good acting. And then the third goal is a classic. Hull City keeper comes up for a corner, ball breaks free, and Dan James smashes it in from just over the halfway line. Classic to win the game.
So he can score from just over the halfway line, but when he has to score a crucial penalty to send his country to the Euros, he misses.
Absolute shambles, isn't he? You're right, AJ.
It's graceful.
Pathetic. Anything else to mention from the games? Because I want to spend the last 5-10 minutes talking about fighting. Anything else to mention?
You went big on your predictions. I got this one.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
The other thing that really annoyed me, which it wouldn't have given me any bonus points anyway, but in the predictions piece I did, obviously I had to cut it down because it was about 10 million words long. I did actually mention that I thought Town were going to score a last-minute winner to win this game 3-2 through Amari Hutchinson, and I took it out to cut down on words, which was slightly gutting. If that had gone in print, I probably would have gone and framed it. But yeah, that was a nice moment there. And hopefully, I know it didn't quite work out yesterday. I might have slightly jumped the gun, but hopefully Leicester's slight wobble will resume sooner rather than later to match with my prediction that they're not quite as good as people think.
Well, I think that's already come to fruition, old friend. I'll give you that one.
Yeah, thank you.
Like in golf, I'll give you that. Rossi, anything from you on anything else from the football before we get on to the fighting?
Yeah, well, we've said this already, but it's a golden ticket, isn't it, being at Porton Road. The entertainers, I think everyone's hearts are stopping at the moment, but it's the place to be right now, being at Porton Road, and even the away games as well. So just enjoy the ride, ladies and gentlemen. Just enjoy the ride. Six big games to go, and what a season it's been.
Six cup finals left. Just to dot the I's and cross the T's as we look at the race for the top two this weekend. Obviously, Town at Norwich. A fairly large game of football in Norfolk, AJ. Leicester at home to Birmingham, and Leeds are at Coventry. Those two are 3 p.m. kickoffs on Saturday. Town, obviously, 12:30. Right then, Rossi, in between all this football stuff, we had a jolly boys outing to the O2 on Sunday to watch Fabio Wardley defend his British and Commonwealth heavyweight titles. Clearly, Fab, big, big Ipswich Town fan. I'd say it was an up and down experience, Rossi. There were some classic Ross moments, which I don't know if you want to share. And there was also Wi-Fi frustration.
Yeah, there was. But yeah, what a day. And what it was a long day, I have to admit. Yeah. I think I got to you about, or got the train about 12:30, and then mm-hmm. got in your car about 1:15, and we got to the O2, and we said we need to get some food, didn't we? Because we didn't know if there's going to be any immediate grounds. So we had some nice Japanese food, which was very nice indeed. And then, of course, got in, and then we didn't have any food. So we're like, thank the Lord that we actually got some food. Obviously, there's lots of other fights. We watched them just to watch them. But yeah, I had a few boo-boos with the Wi-Fi, and I also did a Ross moment, didn't I? I left my laptop in the car because I normally don't need to worry about it using it for photos because I use my phone to import the photos. But you then mentioned me, I need the graphic, mate. I was like, oh yeah, bugger.
So, yeah. I said, we parked for the OT. I said to Ross, I think I'll leave my laptop in the car. I said, really? Yeah, I don't need it. And then obviously realised within a few minutes of actually getting into the arena, oh yeah, I can't actually do the graphic without the laptop. My notes from it, you already touched it, Ross, no media food whatsoever, which is the first time I've been to any sporting event where there's been absolutely no provision for the media. Now, you know, I don't want to sound too kind of privileged and demanding here, but to not even have any water, I had to buy myself a bottle of water at £4.10. The O2 Arena. So yeah, that was surprising. Obviously the fight itself and the atmosphere, Ross. The atmosphere when Fabio walked out. I mean, the chanting of one Fabio Wardley and he's one of our own, that kind of stuff. I didn't really know beforehand like how much of a kind of backing he would have. Obviously, he was topping the bill, but this is the first time he's ever main evented such a big place, but it was absolutely rammed, and the chants were great, weren't they, Rossi?
Yeah, it's great to see. And there was actually a few Ipswich Town shirts. There was,
yeah, they snuck through, didn't they? There's definitely some flags as well. Obviously, Dillian White came out carrying the town flag, which is a nice touch.
Love that. Yeah, Fab's team actually, his trainer Rob, I saw him come out when they had bags, Ipswich Town like shop bags, and they were like taking out like flags and they were just chucking it into the crowd and with people to hold it up, which is just great. But yeah, to see. You know, I bumped into a few listeners. I bumped into a few people I knew as well. So it's great to see them supporting the Charity Boy, Ipswich Lad, Fab. And of course, he went to war. But it was just as an occasion. Like it was a great occasion in terms of, you know, some good fighting on the bill. But when it got to the main event, that was the box office game because a boxing match. I kept saying that during the next photographer next to me. I went, oh, I've got to get ready for the next match. I was like, no, it's in boxing.
It's all right. It's just what you
fine.
Do.
It's just the phrase. Yeah.
This, friends, was, I think, and I've been to a lot of fighting events over the years. This is the best fight I've ever seen live. Absolutely no question about it. It was extraordinary. It was everything that I love about fight sports. It was skill, it was will, it was courage, it was bravery. The beauty of fight sports at their best is it's basically kind of humanity with everything stripped away. So it doesn't matter like what your background is, what car you drive, all these kind of frippery bits on the edges. This is just literally mano a mano, who's got the greater heart, the greater desire, the greater will. And that was what this fight was like. AJ, I know you watched it. What was it like watching at home?
I had the first bit on the radio. I was driving back from Luton on TalkSport, which really gave me an insight into the differences between football commentary, which I've listened to quite a bit of in terms of being in the car on the radio and all that kind of stuff, and boxing commentary, where I've never kind of, even when you listen to big football games, don't really have the same feeling as when you're listening to a boxing match and you're sat there thinking, oh my God, I'm feeling nervous here, just listen to it. Ran inside, got it on the TV, to watch the last few rounds of it. And yeah, wow. I knew that Fab had his nose reddened in the first round quite early on. And the descriptions were fairly vivid. And I didn't realise then, oh, nice one. Yeah, there it is. Didn't realise quite how bad it was until I came in and saw it. And they were saying, oh, you know, there's people in the front row who've been covered in blood. The mat's covered in blood. You can see it's just dripping everywhere. It was pretty grim, but it was, yeah, it kind of almost made it in a way. I was a little bit worried. I think Ross mentioned this yesterday as well. I was a bit worried that it could have impaired his vision, and that could have been the stoppage there, which would have been an absolutely gutting end to a fight like this. But that was really quite something. I'm not 100%. I think that a draw, fair enough, based on how it panned out. I think what was one of them was 15-13 to
Fraser Clark. 112 to Clark, which is nonsense.
12, that was it. Yeah. Which I'm not 100% sure where that came from. It obviously meant that it ended up in a draw, which is fair, but I'm not quite sure that was the right decision. Also, because Fraser Clark had a point off him for...
Well, he got knocked down in the fifth and he had a point off him. So 115-112 is ridiculous.
A little bit weird, yeah.
So, yeah.
Fair enough, right result.
I'm just going to flash this picture up again because it's worth demonstrating. This is Rossi's picture of Fab. I think that might have been just after the doctor had checked his nose, standing in the corner. So watching ringside, it looked to me like his nose was broken because it was like smeared across his face and he's got like a cut right across here. He's got a scar on his nose anyway, which clearly had opened up. And you could actually, given I was so close to the ring, you could see that he would, every time he was breathing, the blood was spraying out of his mouth and his eyes are swelling. It was just an incredible display of heart from both guys, I've got to say. Not only Fab, but Fraser Clark. He was completely exhausted. He could barely stand at the end. Well, he couldn't stand. As soon as the final bell went, he just collapsed to the floor and his team had to help him up. It was continuing this kind of theme of a crazy weekend. It was a night I don't think anyone will ever forget who was there, who saw it. It was genuinely special. What both guys did in that ring. And I think immediately when the draw was read out, obviously there's a slight disappointment, but I don't think either guy really deserved to lose. So it felt like the right thing to do. And then obviously we then went to the presser, didn't we, Rossi, which was held again, strangely, the media centre had been a VIP bar until 8:30. So he walked in there and there's like glasses everywhere and, you know, that kind of thing. And then we weren't expecting Fab to come in, clearly, because his face had taken one hell of a battering. But he duly did. Rossi walked in wearing the third kit and spoke really well, I thought, afterwards.
Yeah, Fab, we know this, don't we? You've interviewed him so many times and he speaks so well. And yeah, to speak so well when you've just done 12 rounds of classic British title fight, you know, boxing is incredible. It was great to see him in the, you know, white third kit. Although you think, what if you get a bit of blood on it? Yeah, it's been ruined. I'm sure he'd been cleaned up and stuff like that. But no, obviously he was wearing a hat just to maybe just cover his eyes a little bit. Kind
of, yeah, dipped down over his face, didn't he? Because I think this part of his face was just basically a bruise.
Basically.
It was extraordinary. And then we got back to Heath Towers, didn't we? About 2:30 in the morning on Monday morning. We'd gone for a little detour trying to find some food for Rossi. at the service on the way home, got a bit lost, got back and Rossi had a little greeting from Benson, didn't you, mate?
Yeah, good old Benson. He was top form, wasn't he? Good to see him. I'm sure there's a few listeners there a bit jealous that I was able to see good old Benson. Had a little quick beer, didn't we, just to sort of calm down a bit from that. Although it did take me a few hours. Bed was nice and comfy, very nice bed. But I was still buzzing from the whole day because it was, you know, a long day. And, you know, what a fight it was. But then, you find that spot, don't you? You find that sweet spot where you then drift off and I went to sleep and then obviously woke up ready to take on another big game at Porton Road. And, what a weekend. What an Easter weekend, boys.
Genuinely, Rossi, I can't remember an Easter weekend as packed with good sporting action as this one has been. The two games, obviously, for Town, the win last night, and then just the nature of the fight on Sunday. It's been absolutely brilliant. AJ, anything from you before we close the show today? Clearly, we're going to be starting to build up now towards the fairly large football game in Norfolk this weekend. Presses will be Thursday, I reckon. Rossi's doing a special fan social live on Friday night, which will be our live podcast this time. And I think, AJ, there's rumours, a little birdie told me, that you might be making an appearance on that.
Yeah, I think having missed the live pod to go to the London Stadium last time, I think it'd be good to get involved. And I think there might be a chance, let's say, that I'll be there on Friday night. So that'll be good. I'm expecting everyone on top form, given how nervous I assume the atmosphere will be in the build up to that game. Mm. Interesting one, John Rowe, seemingly at least, and you can never know for sure, ever, because we've seen this with Kin Dewsbury Hall earlier in the season, Maresca's comments, but Johnny Rowe seemingly ruled out with this one with a hamstring injury, according to David Wagner. He hasn't played since February anyway, so it would have been fairly remarkable if he'd just come back in to play this one. But still, the man who scored two offside goals at Portman Road in the reverse fixture won't be involved by the sounds of it. Still quite a stacked team there, but big blow for them.
Hmm. Anything from you, Rossi? I say, fans, have you got a time for fan social?
TBC. To be confirmed, if you don't know what that means. Even for me, I need to just make sure that is right. That is right, isn't it? To be confirmed. But yeah, it should be a good one.
Excellent. Friends, we've done just over an hour reflecting on a completely mad weekend. I hope you have all started to feel like you're recovering a little bit. I think it's going to take us a little while to get over things, but clearly we've got to, because there's a big game this weekend. Just before we go then, a reminder, support our friends at Manscaped. Use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery on all that excellent clobber. And also, friends, if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, that just helps lift us visibility-wise in our charts. And also, just a reminder, at the moment, we've got our special offer on digital subscriptions. £2 gets you 2 months of all Ipswich Town content, or indeed, I think you can get 30% off for a whole year. So if you sign up now, whatever happens, even if Town end up in the P, I don't want to say the whole word, that will take you through to the end of the season with us. Friends, what a weekend. Ipswich Town are top of the Championship. There's 6 games left in this season, and we're going to be with you every step of the way. We'll be back later on this week to talk about Norwich. We'll have a live podcast, and then, of course, the boys will be there on Saturday. Could it happen, friends? Could it happen? It's starting to feel like it might, you know. Have a great start to the week, and we'll speak to you next time.